Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is January the 8th. We are in Shmuel, and we are Perek Chaf Aleph. Chapter 21. We read through the entire Perek, the entire chapter last time. We ended off with a bunch of questions, and we did not resolve them. Tonight, we are going to try to resolve the questions. And since I'm sure every single one of you remembers the questions as if it was yesterday, and I'm sure over the past 2 weeks, all you did was think about those questions. You probably have answers. Okay. Okay, so let's review what happened in this perek. And review the questions, and then we will try to resolve at least some of them. So we know from Perek Chaf in chapter 20 that Yonatan and David experimented with the arrows to see if Hashem wanted David to run away, and the verdict was that Hashem did want David to run away. And they part ways, and David runs. So David goes to Nov, the city of the Kohanim. That's where he goes. He comes to Nov, and he talks to the Kohen Gadol, whose name is Achimelech. And Achimelech believes that David is one of the chief officers of Shaul, and therefore David is there on official business, and he wants to be as helpful as possible. And David makes up a story and tells Achimelech that he's on top secret and also urgent business. And Achimelech is surprised. He has no entourage. And he says, well, I they had to go elsewhere in whatever business we're dealing. They had to go. But I'm here now. And David tells Achimelech that he lacks food. He desperately needs food. Achimelech is reluctant to give him the food that he has because the only food that he has that's available to David is the lechem hapanim, the showbread. And David tells him that the truth is that the question of whether it's permissible for a non-Kohen to eat the lechem hapanim or not is a moot point because I am in, right now, a life-threatening situation. I desperately need the food, and therefore he takes it. The narrative is interrupted with the statement that one of Shaul's top people is there at this time, Doeg HaAdomi, and he, what is he doing there? He is Netzar Lifnei Hashem. He's there, focused completely on the study of Torah. He is in an intense learning of Torah. That's what he's doing at this time in Nov. Then the narrative continues that David then asks Achimelech for a weapon. Do you have any weapons? Achimelech tells him, the only weapon I have is that of the sword of Goliath, whom you killed. And David asks for it. The way that the pasuk talks about it, Chazal tell us, Rashi cites it, that Achimelech first consulted with the Urim Bitumim. He consulted with the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which is a way of asking Hashem for direction, and asked whether he should give the sword to David or not, and Hashem told him, yes, you should, and he gave it to David. And then David runs away. He runs to Achish, the king of Gath, which is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Gath is, at least it wasn't controlled by the Jews. He runs there. And immediately upon getting there, he overhears the servants of Achish saying that this is the David who killed Goliath. This is the David who the women would sing that Shaul killed in the thousands and David in the 10,000s. And David becomes very scared. And therefore, he acts as if he has become mentally unstable. It says that he allows his saliva to fall on it, to drool, and he writes on the doors, and he just acts generally unstable, and the king says, "Chasem shuvaimani, do I lack insane people? Do I?" And he therefore lets David, and just once they get rid of David, David is able to get away. So that is the summation of what happens in this parak. We asked the following questions. We presumed that David, who is now told by Hashem to run away, David is planning on running out of the country because there's no place else to go. Where are you going to go if the king is after you and the king has unlimited resources within the country? Where are you going to go to be safe? And if Hashem wants me to run away, Jehonatan and David were entertained the possibility that even if the king wanted to kill David, David should remain, in which case Hashem would then protect David. But the arrows told them that Hashem wants David to run. Well, if he wants David to run, where does he want him to go? So if you're going to apply human intellect and logic to this conundrum, the answer is going to be out of the country. Where else are you going to go to be safe from Shaul's reach? And therefore he plans on leaving the country. But before he leaves the country, he goes to Nov. So our first question is, why does he go to Nov? That's question number one. Question number two is, what is this whole episode with the lechem upon him, with the showbread? I understand that David is desperate for food, and he's in a life-threatening situation, that's acceptable. But why the whole description of what happens here with the lechem ha'panim, it seems very wordy, and it seems that the Navi really wants us to know about this. And it also makes reference in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, it says the famous nes, the miracle that happened with the lechem ha'panim. What is the famous miracle of the lechem ha'panim, the weekly miracle?
It stayed fresh,
even though it was eaten 9 days after it was baked. Nevertheless, it was just as fresh as it was the day it came out of the oven. Even though it was not in any sort of refrigeration, it wasn't vacuum packed, it wasn't sealed, it was just sitting on the table, and yet it was just as fresh. And the Navi makes mention of that, which doesn't seem like it's significant. Why bring that up over here? That's also a question. We have reference here to Doeg Ha'adomi, and we know that this is going to be the episode that is going to make Doeg Ha'adomi lose his portion in the world to come. He's going to lose his chelek in Olam Haba because he is eventually going to tell Lashon Hara about Achimelech the Kohen Gadol and the rest of Nov to tell Shaul that they harbored this traitor David. Not only did they harbor him, they actually aided and abetted him, giving him food and giving him a weapon, and as a result, Shaul is going to order the execution of the entire city of Nov, and Doeg is going to have to carry it out, and because of this, he's going to lose his portion of the world to come. Why is Doeg there that day? It seems pretty coincidental that Doeg should be there on that day. He didn't come to spy on David. The Navi tells us, why is he there? He was there to have an intense session of Torah study. That's why he was there, which, as we pointed out last time, can't be a bad thing. So why, at that point in time, that's where Doeg is? It seems too coincidental that Doeg happens to be there at the same time that David is there and David is being helped out. So Doeg sees what happens, and then Doeg is in a position to speak his Lashon Hara. That was another question. We then asked also, what is this whole business with the sword of Goliath? That's the only weapon they have. And the Kohen Gadol has to ask Hashem, through the Urim, the Tumim, through the breastplate, he has to ask whether it's okay to give the sword to David. And he gives the sword to David. That seems very, very descriptive. And what is so special about this sword? And then finally we asked, why does David go to Achish, the king of Gath? And it's a failure from the start. As soon as he gets there, he hears them talking about David who killed Goliath. He's holding Goliath's sword. I mean, after all, what do you expect over there? And he has to, therefore, get away. So what was his plan? And how did it go awry? Those are the questions that we left off with last time. Yeah?
How does the whole town recognize Goliath's sword? Because it's a giant sword?
Yes, yes, his sword was very distinct. We can if you turn back, I was going to show you this, if you turn back to Perek Yud-Zayin, chapter 17, in the description of Goliath before David disposes of him.
Perek Yud-Zayin?
Yeah, chapter 17. It says, in describing all of his armor, it says in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, it says, V'chetz chaniso kimnod organ, V'lahevetz chaniso shesh mioshkolem barzel. It says that the handle of his sword was like the weaver's beam, and the blade of his sword was 600 shekel of iron. It was a very, very large, heavy mm-hmm. sword. It was an obvious thing.
I think David could just lift it and it wouldn't
fit. Okay, so we're going to get to that.
So,
yeah.
So why was the sword
enough? That's what they're doing there. Yeah. Right. Now, if you stay there in chapter 17, go a little further. After David kills Goliath, it says he brought his head to Yerushalayim. Rather large head. And he brought it to Yerushalayim.
Verse 54.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Nundal 54. It says, Vayikach David et Rosh HaPlishti. David took the head of the Plishti. Vayiviyehu Yerushalayim. He brought it to Yerushalayim. Beth Kalav and his utensils. Some of Ba'ahalo he put in his tent. So the Radak points out over here that most of the utensils of Goliath he put in his tent, but the sword he put in Nov, because we see later on the sword is in Nov. So what is the sword doing there? Why was it put there in the first place? That's part of the puzzle over here. What is the sword doing there? And then why is it now taken out of there? If Achimelech had to ask Hashem whether to give the sword to David, that means Achimelech felt the sword belonged there. So what is the reason it belongs there? And then why does that reason become superseded by David being there?
Was Nov a place where you would like keep things to be secure or safe because it was a city of Kohanim?
That's possible. But it seems like it was there. It says wrapped in the Simla Lutaba. It seems like it was there in a special place.
Well, I'm thinking he said when he started the battle with Goliath, it's not me, it's God
right. Who's
going to win this battle. So God owns the sword.
Okay.
And to prove that point, that it wasn't me, that it was God, the sword should be in God's place.
Okay, good. Good. That's a nice explanation. Okay, so we'll build on that.
Right.
Okay, so why does David go to Nov? That's our first question. Why is he going there? Nov is the city of the Kohanim. Now, you could say that David was going to Nov. David needs supplies. He's going to run away. He's going to leave the country. He's going to go to Achish. So he needs a weapon. He needs food. And he's got to be supplied. So perhaps he went to Nov because it was a safe place to go. Anywhere else, who knows? The king's spies, the king's men, they're all over the place. So he's got to get away. He's got to get away quickly, and he's got to get away without being detected. So go to Nov. Perhaps one could argue that's why he went to Nov. The problem with saying that is that, number one, all the food in Nov is off limits to David, because Nov is full of Kohanim, mm-hmm. and Kohanim eat Truma,
right.
And Truma you can't eat if you're not a Kohen.
Right.
Kohanim eat from the Kodshim, from the sacrifices. Only some meat of the sacrifices is permitted to non-Kohanim. Most of it is not permitted to non-Kohanim. Even the Lechem HaPanim, it's not so clear that that would have been permitted to David had it not been for the fact that he was in a life-threatening situation. So if you need food and you're not a Kohen, Nov is not necessarily the best place to go to get food. That's number one. Number two, if David felt safe in Nov, but he makes up a story. He's not up front with Achimelech.
Okay.
He makes up a story. He says the king sent me on a dangerous journey, and you know, he could have made up a story anywhere. I mean, it doesn't have to be in Nov. As long as it's with people who don't know that the king is after him, which at this point in time there wasn't an all points bulletin, you know, all over the place catch David. It was only Shaul's top people that knew that he wanted to catch David. So if he's going to make up a story for Achimelech, he can make up a story for somebody else too. Number three, it wasn't a safe place to go. Doeg was there. So the fact that Doeg was there indicates that it was it's a public place. A public place is not necessarily a safe place to go. If it's a privately held area that no one can get into without official permission for access, okay. So then it's a safe haven. But it's not. It's the area of the Mizbech. Anybody could have been there. Why shouldn't Shaul's men be there like anybody else can be there? And here Doeg, one of his top men, was there. So it's hard to say that David went specifically to Nob because he felt it was the safest place to go. Or the most... the most efficient way to get the provisions that he needed. After all, even to get a weapon, it's not like they had weapons all over the place. He didn't ask for Goliath's sword. He said to Achimelech, "Do you have a weapon for me?" And Achimelech says, "The only thing I have is Goliath's sword." They didn't have weapons all over the place in Nov. It was not a town with a lot of weaponry. So if you need weapons, not the best place to go, unless you really want Goliath's sword, which it doesn't seem like that was David's initiative. It seems like that came from Achimelech. So it's difficult. Why did he run to Nov? It is more likely that he ran to Nov for what Mrs. Lewis said, that he's running for spiritual reasons. He knows he has to leave the country. Hashem has given him a direct sign to run away, which he thinks means to leave the country. We're going to see that he doesn't actually, after he goes to Achish and then he gets away from Achish, he ends up running around Eretz Yisrael for a little while before leaving the country again. But he knows he's got to leave. So if he's going to leave, before he leaves, apparently he felt like he needed to go to Nov to get a spiritual shot in the arm, some necessary fortitude before leaving. Especially since it wasn't just leaving Eretz Yisrael, it was leaving the people. He was now on his own. He was literally alone, without any allies. His wife can't help him anymore. She's Shaul's daughter. Yonatan, his best friend, who's the prince, can't help him anymore. He's literally, it's him, and he's with Hashem. That's it. So he needs that very intense connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's all he's got. It's just him and Hashem. He feels as alone as a person could possibly feel at this time, where the only source of strength that he can have is Hashem. And so, in all likelihood, that's why he runs off to Nov. In all likelihood, that's why he goes. So now, the question is, so he comes to Nov, and he comes for that reason. When he gets to Nov, something happens. The Gemara tells us, achzaso bulmus. Suddenly, he becomes desperate for food in a life-threatening manner. What exactly is the condition, whether it's some sort of hypoglycemia or something like that, but something happens that suddenly David knows that if he does not eat, he is going to die. He becomes extremely desperate for food. Now, he becomes extremely desperate for food in a place where the food is not kosher for David. But if a person, if it's a life-threatening situation, one has no choice but to eat non-kosher food, as we know. There's no prohibition of non-kosher if it's life-threatening. And there was no other choice. So he has to eat something which is normally designated only for Kohanim. If a person needs to eat Kohen food, Terumah is not the best idea, because Terumah, the punishment for eating Terumah for a non-Kohen, is death. It's death by the hands of Hashem. It's not by the hands of the court, but it is Misa Bidei Shamayim. So it is not a good idea to eat that. So if that would have been the only food, he could have eaten that too. But there was an alternative, and that is the lechem aponim, the showbread. That was an alternative. So even though that's not normally given to non-Kohanim, but here David was desperate, and he was given that food to eat. So here David goes to the not the Beit HaMikdash, it wasn't, there was no temple yet, but he goes to the equivalent of that. He goes to where the Mizbeach is, to where the altar is, and he goes there for a spiritual shot in the arm to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when he gets there and he makes up the story, he suddenly is put in a position where he must eat from the Lechem HaPanim. Apparently, Hashem wanted him to eat from the Lechem HaPanim. That's apparently what happened over here. That Hashem wants him to eat. Now, that's almost impossible to happen. How could that happen? Unless Hashem puts him in a life-threatening situation. Now, he's got to eat. So, he is given from the Lechem HaPanim. And the Navi makes it a point to tell us, you know what he ate from? He ate from that special bread that was just as fresh on the day that you ate it, 9 days later, as it was on the day it was baked.
It's almost an analogy to the man which kept crying so in the Mikvah. There's something of a Kaddish, holy, holy.
Okay, something very, very spiritual, and something miraculous. Something that had a physical property that was miraculous. And David is given that to eat. The eating of the Lechem HaPanim was a coveted thing. The Kohanim desperately wanted to eat from it. On Shabbos is when it was divided up amongst the Kohanim who were there. The Gemara tells us that in the days of the Beit HaMikdash, it was the kind of thing that everybody wanted, and you didn't get that much. There were 12 loaves, and the most you got was a little tiny thing. That's the most you got. And even that made you feel satiated. It was so good. And it was so that it was imbued with such a powerful spirituality that when you ate it, even though it was so small, it satiated you. It's like you had a meal. And and of course it tasted unbelievably good, and just and unbelievably fresh, just like it was just out of the oven. The Gemara says that the Kohanim who were tsnuim, the word tsnius, you know, generally means modesty. Here it's being used to mean the Kohanim who were of who are cut above when it comes to their refined character, they wouldn't take any because there was such a rush to get it. The ones who were more refined would say, "Okay, I don't need to get it." They would hang back. That's how desperately everybody wanted to have it. It was a really, really unbelievable thing. And here, David is eating it. David, who should never in his whole life have ever had it, and yet he's having it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put him in a position where he's going to eat Lechem HaPanim.
It's a beautiful gift.
It is. Doeg is there, the Navi tells us. And why is he there? He's there for the intense study of Torah. That means that Doeg has come to Nov for a very similar reason that David has come to Nov. David has come to Nov to connect with Hashem. Doeg has come to Nov to connect with Hashem. A little bit of a different way. Doeg is coming to sit and intensely study the Torah. That's what he's doing. Doeg was of the greatest sages of his generation. And he came to study in a manner that only he could, which was with this intensity of study. Netzar lifnei Hashem. The word sounds like entrenched. That's the word it sounds like just embedded in that study of Torah. That's what he's doing there. So Doeg and David, we have a confluence of events. They both come to Nov to connect to Hashem. David comes, he needs that connection because he's leaving. Doeg comes. We don't know why Doeg needs it at this time, but he does. And he comes now. David is given from the Lechem HaPanim. Doeg witnesses this. Then David says to Achimelech, "I need a weapon. Do you have any weapons?" He says, "The only thing I have is Goliath's sword. That's it." What is Goliath's sword doing there? After all, as many of you asked, it really should belong to David. Okay, so you answered, well, it really belongs to Hashem, because as he said, as David said, it's Hashem who's going to defeat Goliath, not me. And therefore, it's left in the equivalent of the Beis HaMikdash, where the Mizbeach is. The Radak writes that the reason why the sword of Goliath was there was in order to remember the Nes, the great miracle that took place, that David defeated Goliath, which should never have happened, even though David was a very strong and powerful person, nevertheless, he should never have been able to beat Goliath. He was unskilled in war, and the manner that he defeated him with just a stone that it entered through the armor and it killed him, the whole thing was so miraculous. Therefore, the sword was placed in the place of Hashem so that everybody who came would see the sword and remember the great miracle. Pirsume Nisa, to publicize the miracle, like we do on Hanukkah when we light the lights, to publicize the nace. That was the purpose of the sword. David says, I need a weapon. Achimelech says, I don't have any weapons. This is all I got. So he asks Hashem, should I give it to David or not? On the one hand, David, this is Achimelech's thinking, David is on a special mission from the king. It's so important and it's so urgent that David had to run from wherever he was without provisions, without a weapon. And it's top secret. He can't even tell me where he's going. So he needs this weapon. And that must be a national emergency. So he needs the weapon. On the other hand, the purpose of the sword here is to remind everybody of the miracle. That's also a national emergency. Maybe it's not an emergency, but it's a national need. Everybody should see the sword and be reminded of the great miracle that Hashem did. That's equally important, isn't it? That people should be inspired to think about how Hashem saved us with a miracle and how Hashem is not limited in any way and He can protect us no matter what. And we are not in the hands of ourselves. It's not Kol Chayei Ve'Otzem Yadi. It's not my strength. It's Hashem that gives us everything. Isn't that also a national need? So we've got the national need of David, the chief officer of Shaul, who's on a top secret urgent mission. On the other hand, we have the national need of the publicizing of the nace. What should I do? He asks the Urim V'Tumim. He asks the Chosh and the breastplate. And the answer is given, give it to David. He gives it to David. Doeg sees that as well. Yeah.
Where exactly was the sword kept?
It's not 100% clear to me. It says it was Luta Basimla. It was wrapped in a garment. And then it says, then it makes reference to the ephod, which is the apron of the Kohen Gadol. It sounds like it was there in a place where people could see it, but I'm not sure
it's
exactly.
Wrapped up in stuff so that they can't see it.
Wrapped up doesn't necessarily mean that you don't know what's in there. It depends how it's wrapped, right? I mean, it depends what does it mean wrapped. Does it mean wrapped like so you couldn't tell at all what it was, or it means that it was, you know, placed on a fine
garment,
you know. Who knows exactly what that means.
Okay, so my whole problem with this is that if Hashem wanted him to starve and to eat from the miraculous bread to stay fresh, it's like telling me, David, don't worry, you're going to stay fresh. Miracles are going to surround you. And you've got this weapon that shows you that I'm with you and you're going to win all your battles. Okay, that's kind of what it's telling me. Fine. But Doeg being there means to me that Doeg had a test that he failed.
Okay, so that's where we're going. Good.
Okay.
Good. Okay, excellent. So Doeg sees this happen. Now, there's a very, very important fact that you have to know. This Urim V'Tumim, which I keep mentioning, which means, just so you know the terminology, the Kohen Gadol had a breastplate called the Choshen. Choshen is the breastplate. It had the names of all of the Shvatim, and had the names of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as well on it, and the different stones, etc. The Urim V'Tumim is a name given to it, because the name of Hashem was written on a parchment, and it was put the choshen was a doubled over piece of material, and it was put inside the fold. And when the Kohen Gadol would ask a question of Hashem, the stones would light up over the letters that would indicate what the answer was. And when you unscrambled the letters, then you knew what the answer was. We know this from Eli. We had it with Hannah in the beginning of Shmuel, that she was talking and without making any sound, that he asked Hashem, etc. Okay. So we have this choshen. Once there is a king in Israel, which now there is with Shaul, you're not allowed to ask the Urim V'Tumim a question for just anybody. The only person the Kohen Gadol is allowed to ask the Urim V'Tumim on behalf of is the king. And Achimelech asks the Urim V'Tumim on behalf of David, and he gets an answer. How does he go and ask a question on behalf of David?
Although it's not written in here.
Yes, the Gemara says it based on the word Ephod in Pasuk Yud, in verse 10. So there's a simple answer to this. It's not a, you don't have to say a complicated answer over here. How does he ask on behalf of David?
Because
Achimelech believes that he's on a mission for the king. So if he's on a mission for the king, then I'm asking on behalf of the king. That's what I'm doing. David knows he's not on a mission for the king. And Achimelech asks and is answered.
Because he is king.
But only David does that. Achimelech doesn't realize that.
But Doeg should have realized that.
Okay, well. We're getting there. They're getting there. So let's from David's perspective, you're really on the ball time. From David's perspective, what's happened so far? I come here for a spiritual boost. I need it. I definitely need it because it's just me now. It's just going to be me because in just a few days, the whole country is going to be after me. Every single person in this country who is loyal to Shaul is going to look at me as public enemy number one. I'm going to be banished from my people. The only place I can go is to the Plishtim, to Achish, the king of Gath. It's the only place I can go. So I'm finished. So what do I have? Hashem is all I have. So I run to Nov for that spiritual boost. That's what I run for. Great. He comes to Nov, and in Nov, Hashem sets him up so that he's going to eat from the miraculous Lechem Hapanim. He's going to be given the miraculous, not the sword of miraculous, but the sword which represents a miracle is going to be given to David. And he is, without the Kohen Gadol realizing it, he is going to be consulted on behalf of with the Urim V'Tumim. Hashem is giving many messages to David. First of all, I'm with you. I'm going to take care of you. You're going to have what to eat. You're going to be protected. You're going to have miracles happen, like you said, surrounded by miracles. You're the king. I'm affirming that. I'm making it clear to you, even though they don't realize it, but you realize it. You're the king. It's going to be good. It's going to be all right. It's an amazing affirmation that David gets from this visit to Nov. Imagine when he leaves, how much more confident he feels, how much more bolstered he is than he was when he came. It's a tremendous boost. Doeg is there. Now, Doeg, we already know, is jealous of David. We know, we've already pointed out that Doeg and David are very, very closely related in their names. Doeg and David have the exact same gematria. Doeg and David are almost the exact same spelling. Dalet, Vav, and then the third letter in David's name is a Dalet, which is four, and Doeg is Aleph Gimel, which is also four. One and three is also four. It's the exact same. They're very, very similar. David is Admoni. Admoni means he's red. Doeg is Ha'adomi. Very similar. They're very, very similar. Clearly they share some kind of a link. We already have seen that although David was anointed privately, but Doeg knows about it, and Doeg therefore speaks Lashon Hara about David to Shaul. We already know that Doeg is jealous of David's close relationship with Shmuel. And we know that this incident is where Doeg is going to be pushed over the edge, where he's going to speak to Lashon Hara. Hashem orchestrates that David and Doeg come to Nov at the same time. Perhaps Doeg is there a little bit earlier than David, but Doeg is in that mode of intense learning. Doeg suffers from a yetzer hara, from an evil inclination called kinah, called jealousy. We know that yetzer hara, the evil inclination, can be divided up into three general types. There is taiva. Taiva means desire. That would be food. That would be immorality. We know there's taiva, there's desire. There's kavod. Kavod is honor. Ego. That would be another type. And there's kina, jealousy. Every yetzer hara fits into one of those three general categories. Hakina, the hataiva, the hakavod. As the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, hakina, jealousy, the hakavod, and the seeking eyes, honor, pride. The hataiva, or the other round, kina, taiva, kavod, and desire. Motzien es ha'adam min ha'olam, they take a person out of the world. As the Mefarshim explain, out of this world and out of the next world. When people are caught up in these yetzaharas, they have no life. Their lives are bitter. Their lives are unhappy. And they lose their portion of the world to come. Doeg, for all of his greatness, and he was great. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Torah scholar. He was great. But he's been trapped in this yetzer hara of kina, of jealousy. He's jealous of David. And that's ultimately what makes him lose his portion of the world to come. But the kina is already there before this incident. He's already jealous. So if a person is caught by the yetzer hara, a person is in a very bad place where they seem to have no self-control over whatever the issue is. They're literally trapped by the yetzer hara. And Hashem wants to give the person an opportunity to get out of that trap. What is the best mindset to put the person in that they would be most fortified, they would have the greatest likelihood of pulling themselves out of that trap of the Yetzer Hara?
Torah study,
being at the Mizbeach, being with the Kohanim. The environment is one of people who are dedicated to Hashem. The environment is one where people come to dedicate themselves to Hashem, where the entire country comes there when they want to do something spiritual. It's like a Yom Kippur anytime you want. And studying Torah. So Hashem sees that Doeg wants to study Torah, which is a good thing. And Hashem says, I'm going to give Doeg a chance to get himself out of this terrible yetzer hara of kina, of jealousy. At the very moment that he is in the holiest place of the time, which is Nov, it's not the Beis HaMikdash, but it's the holiest place of the time, and he is involved, not just involved, but he is focused in the most holy of endeavors, studying Torah, at that moment, I'm going to bring David, and no one else is going to know the real story besides David and Doeg. All the other Kohanim are not going to know. They're going to believe the story that David is on a mission from the king. But Doeg knows better, because Doeg is one of the people on the inside circle that knows the king wants to kill David. So Doeg knows the truth. So when David says what he says, Doeg knows it's lies. It's not true. So Doeg knows the truth, which means that Doeg also witnesses David getting from the Lechem HaPanim, and he knows that there's something strange going on over here that he gets from the Lechem HaPanim. Doeg knows that David gets the sword of Goliath, and Doeg knows that David got a response from the Urim and Tumim, the question that was asked by Achimelech on behalf of David. You know, the Pasuk says when Miriam and Aaron speak Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, so Hashem says after telling them the difference between themselves and Moshe, then the final accusation is the Lama Lo Yireisem. Why weren't you afraid L'daber Ba'avdi B'Moshe, to speak about my servant Moshe? That's the final accusation. And then Miriam gets Tzaras. Rashi says over there that Hashem said to them, you knew that I have a close relationship to Moshe Rabbeinu. You should have been afraid to speak about him because you knew that I'm close to him. Which means that I, quote, so to speak, hold of him. I believe in him. I think he's great. If I think he's great, you should have been scared to speak about him. And then Rashi ends off. And if you say that it's only because I don't realize his true self, then that's even worse. Right? You think, I didn't know about Moshe? You think, Hashem, I know you're close to Moshe, but you don't really know Moshe. That's even worse. That's worse. I know it better than you do.
Was David aware? I mean, did he know that David was knighted king?
He must have been. He must have been aware. We pointed this out a few chapters ago. He must have known because he already tries to belittle David in the eyes of Shaul. He already is aware of this. So when a person who is very jealous of somebody else is given a clear picture that Hashem, we'll use that word again, holds of that person, that puts the person who is very jealous in a very difficult position. If I'm very jealous of somebody else and I see that person is succeeding, what I try to do in my mind is to mitigate that success. Oh, it's not really success. Oh, that person is just window dressing. Ah, the person is, you know, I try to, it's not really good. It's really bad. You know, the person's a bad influence. When you're jealous, you try to cut the person down. Even if you're not talking about him, you don't want to speak Lashon Hara, but in your head, you try to cut the person down. But if you're giving a clear picture that clearly Hashem likes this person, clearly Hashem is close to this person, clearly Hashem is doing the bidding of this person, it's much more difficult to rationalize cutting him down. And in that situation, the person who is jealous has really only two ways to go. One is to figure out a way to let go of that jealousy. Say, listen, that person's a good person, I've got to quit the jealousy. Somehow I got to let go of the jealousy. Somehow I got to realize that everybody has their own special place. Everybody has their own special job. He has his. I have mine. Everybody has different missions. And Hashem does not allow the two missions, one to eclipse the other. Everybody's got their own. And there's room for everybody at the table. And it's not my decision who's going to sit at the head of the table and who's going to sit at the side of the table. That's not my decision. That's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for whatever reason, he has him sitting at the head of the table, not me. That's what a person has to do when it comes to jealousy. So he either has to say that, or he has to say somehow that these signs, that these messages are somehow not real. And you're stuck with trying to say Hashem isn't really with him. No, it's a trick. No, I don't know. Or, even worse, Hashem doesn't understand how bad he really is. Hashem's making a mistake, as Rashi says over there. Something has to give. Because how could it be that I'm jealous because I think that he doesn't deserve what he's getting, but Hashem is giving what he's getting? So, which one is it? You're left in a very tight spot. So, in our day and age, where we don't have miracles, we don't have such indications, a person can always rationalize, yeah, it's not real. Yeah, you know, it's just like, you know, rush of a Tovlo. He's really evil, but he's having a good time for now. But what Doeg saw over here is very difficult to rationalize. He saw overt signs of David's being the affirmation of David from Hashem. And therefore, he now had a choice. Where is he going to go? Is he going to hold on to the jealousy or get rid of the jealousy? Why didn't Doeg blow David's cover? If he knows the truth, when David made up a story and said, I'm here on a mission of the king, why didn't Doeg step forward and say, Achimelech, he's a liar. The king wants to kill him. Now, I grant you, Achimelech wouldn't have necessarily believed Doeg right off the bat, but he may have given him pause. He may have had Achimelech said, what? Here I have one top officer of the king who I'm trying to help, and then the other top officer of the king says he's got a price on his head. Well, right. At least Achimelech would have had to stop and reconsider. Why didn't Doeg blow David's cover? I suggest to you that Doeg was in the midst of an incredible internal battle. Right here. He is wrestling with his jealousy. He wants to see what's going to happen. He really wants to see. He doesn't want to blow David's cover. He wants to see, is Hashem going to help him out? And now, what's going to happen? And he sees everything. And in the end, he still loses the battle. In the end, he's going to speak the Lashon Hara. And he's going to tell Shaul that Achimelech is a traitor. He committed treason because he aided and abetted a criminal. And he's going to have to be killed. In the end, he's going to lose the battle. But Doeg is at this time being given the opportunity to try to overcome this trap of the Yetzer Hara. He has an incredible internal battle and unfortunately loses the battle. Yeah.
So when you say it's so clear, I understand that Hashem's signs are there, but like, if we were living in those days and the Philistines took the Luchos and actually had possession of the Luchos for a period of time, we might say, Hashem loves them. Look, he gave them the Luchos. He allowed them to, you know, like some of these bad people are prospering, so to speak, and we don't see the long term. We might think for that moment, why is Hashem favoring them? Why, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because we don't see the whole picture. So when you say it's so clear to Doeg, isn't there some of that going on?
I'm sure that's what went on. I'm sure that he rationalized the whole thing. But you understand, this thing about the Urim and Thummim is very difficult to rationalize.
That's a real tough one. Yeah.
That's a real tough one.
The miraculous things are hard to...
Right. Now, it doesn't mean that you can rationalize anything. You can rationalize anything. Paro, in the past 2 weeks, Parsha, even before, you know, eventually Hashem has to harden his heart. But until Hashem hardens his heart, he's rationalizing. Blood, he rationalized. Frogs, he rationalized. He rationalized all the way up to boils. He rationalized. I mean, he convinced himself this is not from Hashem. That's what he did. You can rationalize anything. And eventually Doeg rationalized. That's what happened. That is exactly what happened. Yeah.
King David wasn't actually saying a lie. Because he is the king. He's doing the mission.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I want to save my life.
Okay.
He's the king.
I got you. It's misleading, but you're saying it's not an overt lie. That's a good point.
It's not a lie at all.
Okay. So David then runs with the sword of Goliath. So I want to pause here to emphasize a point which we've made before, but it's worthwhile saying again. This sword of Goliath, one of you brought it up, it's this gigantic, very heavy sword.
That's the thing you run away with.
Yeah. So this just underscores, it underscores the point. David was a very strong person. A very, very strong man. He was not a weakling. He was a very strong person. I told you this, that later on we're going to find that David had he had bows, like a bow and arrow. He had bows that were made out of iron. Now, in order for a bow and arrow to work, you have to take the bow and you have to bend it, because that's what gives it the tension. When you let go, it makes the arrow fly. And the stronger the material is that you're bending, the further the arrow will go. That makes it a more powerful weapon. So the stronger you are, the further you can shoot an arrow, because you can take a more powerful material and bend it. So there's wood and a thicker wood, a stronger wood. David had iron. David had nechoshes, not iron, copper. He had nechoshes. He had copper bows, which no one could bend. And he would have them hanging on his wall. And when visiting kings would come, they would see those bows, and they would say, "You think he can bend those bows? He can't bend those bows. They're just there to scare us. We should think he can bend those bows." The devil would hear them, and he would casually walk into the room, take one of the bows off of the wall, and bend it in front of them, and show them that he was a very strong person. He still wasn't Goliath, but he was a very, very strong person. It's not like Shimshon. See, Shimshon was not naturally a strong person. He was given strength when necessary. When he davened, he was given strength. David was naturally very strong. Yaakov also was very, very strong. You know, when Yaakov takes the stone off of the well, Rashi over there says, Melamed, this teaches us, Shekocho Gadol, he was very strong. It wasn't this sudden burst of strength, like Shimshon style, where he takes up. He was naturally that strong. Yaakov is a very strong man. David was a very strong man. He was one of the few people, perhaps one of the only people, who could wield the sword of Goliath effectively. That it wasn't too heavy for him. He could use it. He was able to use it. He goes to Achish, and we're just about out of time, but he goes to Achish and immediately discovers that he can't stay there. Now, I don't know why he goes specifically to Achish. I have some possibilities in my mind, but I don't know the real reason. The fact is, later on, right now he goes to Achish, he can't stay there because he realizes his life is in danger. He leaves Achish, and he's going to go back into Eretz Yisrael, and now he's going to run around Eretz Yisrael for a little while. Eventually, he's going to end up back with Achish. Towards the end of Shmuel Aleph, he will end up back with Achish. So, apparently, either David had some sort of a premonition that he's supposed to go to Achish, but this is premature. He knew that Achish was the place to go, but this is a little bit too early to get there. Either that, or politically, Achish was the best place to go. It was the safest place to go to get away from Shaul, perhaps. I don't know if it was a political move or if it was some sort of a spiritual thing that he knew that he belonged over there. I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question. But he goes to Achish now. It's not the right time to be there. He has to come back into Eretz Yisrael, as we'll see when we start Chaf Beis, and later on he will end up back with Achish, as we'll see later on in Shmuel.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.